watching Prohibition fall down. What's up, DGC? Scotty Real, and I'm hanging out today. Oh, I'm psyched. The dude couldn't make it, so I'm just doing this interview solo. But David Bienenstock, what's up, brother?
What's happening? Thanks for having me, Scotty.
Yeah, I'm really psyched about that one. David Bienenstock, author of How to Smoke Pot Properly, and I'll give you the full introduction. How to Smoke Pot Properly, a highbrow guide to getting high. And you're also co-host of The Great Moments in Weed History with Abdullah and Bean. I'm going to assume that you are Bean.
That is a correct assumption.
Nice, man. No, Abdullah's been on, he's on Vice, right? I see him on TV all the time, man.
Yeah, he was the host of Bon Appetit. Yep. For the first couple seasons. That's actually how he and I met. I was like the lead producer of the show when it was a web series. And he and I were friendly before that. But then he came on as host. So, you know, we traveled all over the country having these weed food adventures and just
awesome.
You know, lots of downtime when you're doing that. We just like to blaze and tell each other stories. I'd find myself telling him, you know, just crazy stories about weed. I've been reporting on cannabis for like 15 years. He's a little newer to it. So that was kind of the vibe. And that was the vibe when we decided to do a podcast. That's kind of the vibe of the show. I take a different story from history, like Willie Nelson smoked a joint on the roof of the White House.
Yes.
Or Napoleon invaded Egypt, and that's how hashish sales started in Europe. Or, you know, we did a great one about Carl Sagan. And when we sit down, I've done all the research. I got the whole story worked out. Abdullah, who's also in High Maintenance, which is an amazing show. The new season's just starting. He's in a few of those.
Respect.
He's got no idea what the story's going to be when we sit down. So it's just he interrupts with jokes, questions, a lot of history, a lot of humor. It's fun.
Oh, that's awesome, man. You know, I was really looking for that because the cannabis history, it's kind of funny. Pre-internet information was really hard to get. You'd be like, I remember thinking about, you explained this guy, I think his name's John Randall. He's like the guy that had glaucoma and got prescribed 300 joints from the government. You know, they would roll him his joints or whatever. And I was just thinking about him, how like that was a legend. When I was in high school, it was a legend. There's this guy that gets governments rolled for him by the, you know, that gets joints rolled for him by the government. But I'll be damned if anybody ever knew about that and why. Goddamn, if you knew why, you would really be pissed, you know? But they used to be able to keep that information really secret there, you know, really, really hidden. And it's really awesome that you're doing the work to uncover it. I appreciate the hell out of that. I've been looking for something like that, actually.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, check it out. Great Moments in Weed History. And you put your finger right on it. You know, I've been doing this like 15 years, so the internet was definitely around when I started reporting about cannabis, but it wasn't around when I was a younger person really interested in this subject. And, you know, this has always been a propaganda campaign. If you know the truth about cannabis, you're going to want it to be legal at least and probably like it if you know the actual truth.
Sure.
So to keep it illegal, there's had to be this propaganda campaign of, you know, lies. And the internet really broke through that wall in a way where, you know, where your buddy might tell you in a smoke sesh that there's the government sends 300 joints
right.
a month to people. And you might tell that to somebody at the next sesh. And we kind of kept this oral history culture going. But the internet documented it all and made the case available to anybody who wanted to learn about it. And that was game changing.
Absolutely.
And, you know, for me, I also came up, I was working at High Times magazine back at a time where we felt like the only truthful source of information about cannabis that had that kind of a platform, certainly sure. that like reached that many people. And it was, you know, I'm glad that has changed, but it was such a honor and a privilege and a responsibility to do that. Yeah, it's crazy to think back on that time period.
No, huge respect to you, man. I mean, even I'm reading your book and it talks about you're able to meet guys like Damian Marley and get high with them and stuff. I'm just freaking, I won't say jealous, but wish I was there. What's that, envy? I don't know. I wish I was there, damn it. And it just seems amazing, man, to get that kind of knowledge and wisdom from folks like that, man. You know, it's so much, you know, a lot of times cannabis and alcohol get grouped together, but they are so different. And you've got some really cool quotes about that, things that really spoke to me. Like, I've spent, I think, $500 getting stickers for the Emerald Cup, put them everywhere. It says, when you smoke the herb, it reveals you to yourself. Man, that's one of my favorite Bob Marley quotes. And I so believe it, man. And you put that in your book. I'm sure you believe it, too.
Yeah, absolutely do. And you know, not always... not always in ways that are easy to accept or understand. You know, I think that sometimes when people have a difficult experience with cannabis, whether it's, you know, you're one of your first time smoking, or you're smoking more than you're used to, or edibles or whatever.
Right.
Part of that can be that process of being revealed to yourself is warts and all. You know, we have parts of our brain that protect us from self-reflection that is harsh. But, you know, weed will bring you to that place. And I think that's really important. And when I think of the society that we live in, that's an aspect of cannabis that really does need to be shared. Not just the medicinal part, not just the fun part, and maybe not even just the spiritual part, but also the part where it's going to be this asshole check on yourself. I speak from experience. I had that experience. I actually wrote about it in the book, you know? And I think that if more people had that experience, we'd get along better, you know?
I agree 100%. I was just at the Emerald Cup recently, and it was just such an incredibly different vibe. A cannabis event is so much different of a vibe than like an alcohol fueled event. There's no bravado there. You know, there's a lot of people when you smoke cannabis, I think you do want to empathize and understand a little bit better, you know, or a lot better, I should say, as it breaks down the bravado, in my opinion.
Yeah. The past 2 years at the Emerald Cup, they've had no arrests. This is a crowd of 25,000 plus people. The doors open at noon every day.
Yep.
And some of those concerts went way past midnight. No arrests, and no one was taken to the hospital, even including things like turning their ankles. You know, it's definitely like a testament to, you're not going to get that at the Great American Beer Festival. Let me tell you. And I, you know, that's not a knock on alcohol. It's just more for a crowd that size that's gathered for any reason. That's an incredible, you know, sort of testament to the safety and the vibe of the weed crowd.
I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, I don't dislike alcohol. My podcast partner, the dude, loves to drink beer. And so, you know, he's always defending alcohol. I got no problem with alcohol. I just hate that it has to be compared to cannabis, that we've got to be in that same group, because it's not the same. You know, all these, you want to call it an intoxicant, whatever, but it's not the same. I mean, the cannabis, I can have high levels of cannabis. I have epilepsy, so I constantly have high levels of cannabis in my system, and it's not the same as having a high level of alcohol in my system consistently. Your body just, you can't put it in that same group.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I put a whole section in my book called How to Deal with Alcohol Culture. Because alcohol culture is so pervasive that we often don't notice it. You know, whether you go, obviously, if you go to a bar, that's alcohol culture.
Sure.
What about if you go to a concert? What about if you go to a family gathering? You know, so much of our socializing has been wrapped up in alcohol culture for so long. We're like fish in water. We don't even know what water is.
It's so true.
And I think one of the opportunities with legalization is we have to take this wonderful cannabis culture that we've always had, that's always been below the surface, that I think we all like and think has great aspects to it, and we have to share it with everyone else without letting them come in and tell us what our culture is, you know? And that's a balancing act. But it's... it's important to do, you know.
I agree with you, but I'm saying, here, these are quotes from your book. We've officially reached the beginning of the end of pot prohibition, which at this point, the key question becomes, what next? How do we keep the weed heads? How do we keep the weed heads and kick out the greed heads? I don't know. You tell me. It's, I mean, you've worked for what, High Times, Vice. I mean, those guys don't operate on charity. I'm sure my cable network doesn't take charity, you know, the donations for Vice. You know, those guys are making money, no?
Yeah, I mean, I don't work for with either of those companies at this point. I'm a full-time freelancer. Let me put it this way. Part of the reason why Abdullah and I started the podcast, why we started Great Moments in Weed History, is we wanted something after working for all these other brands.
Sure.
We wanted something that we could produce ourselves with our own money,
right,
that we could own the show, that we could have 100% not just creative control over it, but business control over it. That if we could build up an audience, then we wouldn't be dependent on anybody else. And also we can make the show the exact show we want and know people are sort of asking for it. Versus, like, let me give you a couple of examples. Like,
yeah,
Netflix... You know, Netflix's idea of a weed show was disjointed. Maybe some people like that.
Right.
It wasn't my idea of what a weed show should be that I would want to make, that I would want to watch. And it failed because I think it was pretty cynical, you know. But podcasting allowed us the idea to take this idea. We're both very passionate about weed history. I see legalization as a great thing, but there's an attempt to erase the culture.
I agree. Everything's
forget
going-
about everybody who fought and suffered to get us this far. Yep. All of our cultural heroes like Louis Armstrong and Carl Sagan, and to just say, oh, a bunch of Wall Street D-bags came in and legalized weed and they should get all the credit and all the money. And what we really have is this outlaw history, this history of resistance to an oppressive government and to cultural shaming and to stereotyping of people and the racism involved in all of it.
Yeah.
Our culture pushed back against all of that and we're winning, and we need to tell that history to ourselves and we need to tell that history to everyone else. Because it is possible to overcome oppression. You know, that's an important thing to believe right now. And cannabis is actually a really good example of that.
I agree with you. But unfortunately, what I see is these huge money, the same people that kept cannabis oppressed because it was profitable, whether they were making money off the prison industrial complex or a big alcohol or tobacco or whatever the hell it was. Those same people are now saying, oh, it's time to buy in, boys. Let's buy in. Let's take our, you know, our multi-million dollars or $1 billion and throw it into, you know, whatever it is, canopy growth or, you know, what a Philip Morris is buying in, you know, beer companies are buying in. All these were throwing lobby against us for and making lies against us for 30, 40, 50 years. Now, you know, be careful what you wish for, you know, strange bedfellows.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's, you know, there's another section in my book called Cannabis Should Transform Capitalism, not the other way around.
I didn't finish the book, man. In all fairness, man, I'm on like 3/4 of the way through it, man.
I'm not saying it that way. I'm busting your balls, but I'm coming from.
Hey, by the way, I'll just give a disclaimer. This book is fucking good. And the way I found out about it was you got a good strategy how to smoke pot properly. I seen that. I'm like, what the hell is it? Who's gonna tell me how to smoke pot, man? I've been smoking it for 30 years. And I start reading the Amazon reviews, and it's like, this book is actually really good, man. So I bought it. And it was really good, man.
Thank you. Well, yeah. I appreciate that.
Yeah, all right.
I mean, I think it's like this. There's two fights going on. The economic fight that you're talking about,
right,
of who's going to control the market share.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a fight that we are on very difficult terrain, you know.
They control the products that we get, too. If we're all buying Misty pens filled with vape juice that was made in 2015, you know, what are we getting?
I'm saying, and it's like we should all push to support, you know, the same way people buy the kind of food they want to eat. If you want to support small farmers and organic growers and local food systems. You know, you can do that with your dollar. You can do that politically. That's a fight that we're having and worth defending. The other part of this is who's going to define weed culture?
Right.
Is weed culture going to be the continuation of our culture as we've known it going back hundreds of years, really? Or is it going to be commodified and corporatized and become a luxury brand type thing? Both things are going to happen, but we have a much better chance right now to be the weed culture and to define weed culture and to share the weed culture that already exists. If we really get behind that, I mean, that's, like I said, the reason we really want to tell weed history in our podcast is another great Bob Marley quote. If you know your history, then you know where you're coming from. And for cannabis people who really care about it, if you know that history of being fucked with, but of also having all of these like triumphant heroes,
sure.
Then you take pride in that. And when somebody says, no, weed is a gold-plated vape pen, you'd be like, get the fuck out of here. You swear on your podcast, right?
Absolutely, man.
Okay.
All the fucking time, man. But you're right. And it's just, I mean, when I was at Emerald Cup, a month ago or so, it's Cookies brand hats and Mendo brand clothing. And it's all this branding. And I'm like, do you guys sell weed? I'm like, no, our partners do, you know? And you were talking, I think you met the guys from Medicine Man one time. I go and interview these guys as well. We were just at Incredibles Edibles last week. And you realize you're like, the passion is in, these guys are really good businessmen. They're not amazing growers. They couldn't give a shit what they're growing with. You know what I mean? They're all about profits and running this business and maybe about promoting cannabis as medicine. I don't know. But, because they're so busy running a business half the time.
Yeah. I mean, I think, like I said, they're going to come in and they're going to get their market share. The system is set up for that. I think one thing I'd love cannabis people to understand is a lot of your argument is, in fact, with capitalism, which is a good thing, which is a good insight. It's, capitalism is going to happen to the cannabis industry. And everything that you see that you don't like, well, look at other parts of capitalist system that we live under and challenge that as well. You know, you don't get to pick and choose. You know, it kind of burns me up when I encounter people who are like, oh, free market capitalism is the greatest, except for weed, because I care about it. You know, yep. It's like you should care about everything.
Oh, that's beautiful, man. Hey, you should write some shit down, man. You're pretty good at this, man. Hey, you know, speaking of that, you've got some knowledge. I don't know if you've done an episode of this or not, but some specific knowledge I haven't heard before. And do you mind if I just ask you a couple things, like about the one of these big pharma experiments, man? That Rametto brand or something? The one where they tried to give people the reverse munchies?
Oh yeah, I know. The name of the drug is escaping me, but I know the story.
Remetaband or something. I don't know, but I just think it's so funny. You know, I guess it's not that dumb to think that they knew that cannabis gave you the munchies, so they tried to give you the reverse munchies and block the endocannabinoid system. You take it from here.
Yeah. What ended up happening is there was a limited clinical trial. The drug was essentially designed to block, as you say, your endogenous cannabinoid system from even working with the endocannabinoids, which are just naturally occurring in the brain. And what happened is it led to a bunch of suicides, so many that they stopped the study before it was supposed to even be finished. I think that just points to the centrality of that system in the proper functioning of the human body and mind.
Yeah.
Which of course are one, the mind and the body are not separated in any way.
Last time I
checked.
In terms of
medicine. So that study, and then there is the theory, of course, that many people who have illnesses, it is attributed to having an endocannabinoid system that is just not functioning properly. And that's why so many different conditions can be treated with cannabis, from neurological conditions to chronic pain to seizure disorders. You know, those are very different
sure
kinds of illnesses, but cannabis can help alleviate the symptoms of all of them and even potentially prevent or reverse those conditions.
And it's so crazy how just plain discrimination, the kind of stuff that you would think would go on in another country, has happened to cannabis. And what I'm thinking of is, Carl Sagan, what, his college roommate or his best friend or something, Lester Grinspoon, isn't that his name? Do I got that right?
Yes, Dr. Grinspoon.
Yep, Marijuana Revisited. I have his book. And what happened? Lester Grinspoon had a kid that had, was it leukemia or something like that?
Yes.
And he was, you can take the story from here, but it's just absolutely amazing what's going on with that, no?
Yeah, I mean, I did a story online, that you can look up that really kind of tells the story best. And it's I smoked pot with Carl Sagan a lot.
Gotcha.
And that was a Vice story. But here what ended up, and actually we did an episode of the podcast. I'm going to have to direct people if you want to hear this amazing story about the lifelong weed smoking friendship between Harvard Medical School professor who became one of the first people to research cannabis and show that it was a medicine, and his best friend Carl Sagan, and how that profound relationship changed both their lives and the lives of weed. That is just one of 12 episodes awaiting you over at the Great Moments in Weed History
podcast. I love it. Welcome to the podcast family, my brother. You know what I'm saying? I can't entertain people all the time. You need to go over to your channel every now and again. Hey, but tell this story though, man. Or well, I just remember you already told me the story this morning in the book, man. But dude, this kid was going to chemotherapy. He would literally be puking in the car. He'd be puking all day long. He'd be so sick. And then they give him a couple of hits of pot. He goes, "Hey, mom, there's a sub shop down the street. You think we could go? Like it's out of the fucking movies, man." And I mean, this kid had an appetite all of a sudden, man. It was real medicine. And he tried to get a study done on it. Is that what happened? The next year he got a study done on it?
Yeah, well, his father, as I mentioned, was a Harvard Medical School professor. And what he did was he quietly gathered some of his colleagues. I mean, they genuinely didn't know. You know, now so much is known about the medicinal properties of cannabis that if you're talking to a so-called expert and they deny it, they're just full of shit. But we're talking about back in the 70s, a lot less was known. And having witnessed this firsthand with his own son, Dr. Grinspoon gathered a bunch of his colleagues from the, you know, cancer wards and the oncology departments at Harvard and said, "You got to see this. You've seen my son. You've seen him go through chemo. You've seen countless people go through chemo.
Right.
Now watch the difference when he has a couple of puffs of weed." And that led very directly to the first study, the first FDA-approved study that showed that cannabis or THC has medicinal benefit for treating the nausea of chemotherapy, which was landmark research. It was the first time the government had, in essence, acknowledged the medicinal properties of at least THC, if not cannabis.
Cool. So I'm sure they went full steam ahead on research, no? I mean, it's like the opposite happened, man. They just buried it, man.
Yeah. They did.
It's unbelievable. I mean, what was wasn't there a 1975 study or something like that? The NIH study, I thought. But then they just bury these things, man. It's unbelievable, man. I think it has to. I don't think it's unbelievable. If you think about the introspection you get with cannabis, you think about giving a bunch of educated people a little bit of free time and some time to introspect, it's probably fairly dangerous. I might avoid that if I'm trying to control 270 million people, however many we got right now.
Yeah. And then on the flip side, of course, you know, the whole war on cannabis has been a pretext to go after people of color, to go after the poor, to go after any kind of political group that's organizing against the government. That's, you know, so it's, you know, that's how and why it's gone on so long when we know all the evidence is on the other side.
Yeah, I mean, you think about it, it's $20 billion a year. I think they said half of it goes to enforcement and the other half goes to lost tax revenue. I mean, that's a lot, man. That's a lot. There's a lot to be losing. And I see why they want to get their hands on it now, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, the needle is definitely moving in the right direction. And not just in the United States. The legalization movement and the sort of liberation movement is spreading pretty rapidly all around the world. You know, I think that if we make it, we'll be living in a very different weed world in 10 years.
Yeah,
All over.
You think we'll keep our culture?
I think we have to, you know. I think it will always be there. It's just where that line is drawn.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, the real culture is always going to be there. The corporate bullshit is always going to be there. Our job is to just create and support as much of the real shit as we can. And, you know, that's why, you know, I appreciate being on your show. I appreciate the time and effort and joy that you put into making it. And, you know, and that's why I make stuff to share myself. So everybody, you know, everybody has that choice to make. What are you going to support? Are you going to support something authentic and real when it comes to cannabis? Or are you going to, you know, buy into sort of the new corporate vision of what cannabis is?
Right. Right. We say vote with your dollars on our show, man.
Absolutely.
Love it. Dude, this was cool, man. I appreciate you coming and hanging out with me, man. Thanks for fitting me in your busy schedule.
Yeah, same, man. It was a blast.
Yeah, very cool, man. All right, plug the podcast again, because this is what's come out every week or what? When you guys do these?
We do seasons. So season one is up in its entirety now. Nice. And we're working on season two, which will be coming out pretty soon. But it's all ever, you know, they're all just individual stories. So season one, you can jump in anytime. You can start with, there's one about the first time the Beatles smoked weed, Bob Dylan smoked him out.
Yeah.
So that's a great moment in his weed history. We have an episode about Maya Angelou. We have an episode about Fela Kuti. Like I said, Carl Sagan. There's an incredible episode about Jesus.
You're going
definitely
deep,
one
man.
Of my favorites. Right. Definitely one that we got a lot of emails about.
I bet.
And yeah, so check them out. You know, it's if you love history and you like weed, you're gonna like the show. If you like history and you love weed, you're gonna love the show. Great moments in weed history with Abdullah and Bean.
Sounds like I'll love it, man. David Bienenstock, man. I like that. Sounds like you should run a seed company, brother.
I should have.
I love it, man. Thank you so much for hanging out, man.
Yeah, same. Take care.
Stay in touch. Some people love to blaze up the dank. Yeah, we get happy for noon. And when the boss man says to take a little break, that means we lighten up a dude. It's just weed. It's just weed. I like to keep good thoughts on. It's just weed. It's just weed. In my toolbox there's a bomb. Some people start their day off with a
pill. It's what the doctor says to do. They shake their heads at natural medicine. Go ahead and try something new. It's just weed. It's just weed. And that to keep the good vibes on. It's just weed. It's just weed. I like to smoke it all day long. Now if the big man catch you riding high, ooh, we gonna lock you in a cage. No. If you wonder why he hates the dank, just look at how he's being paid. Now, don't lock up me.